Hey everyone, before we get started, if you've got a second, Tess and I would really appreciate it if you could hit that subscribe button wherever you're listening. It makes a big difference for us as we're developing this podcast, and it just lets you know when our new episodes are released. Thank you. What happens when you have that second baby? The change to having another sibling is beyond what we can probably comprehend.
Is it like going from a monogamous relationship to a polyamorous relationship?
Yes, yeah, so imagine suddenly there's a third. Actually, they do not need to like their sibling, and that is okay. Suddenly we expect more of that toddler. What is a stress behavior, and how would you know? Kia ora and welcome to the You've Got This podcast with Zazie and Tess. Tess and I are speech and language therapists with a combined 18 years working in the field with children and their whānau, so we know a thing or two about what makes them tick.
We want to empower you to know exactly what you can do to support your child's development. We're going to be touching on all of the important topics that you want to hear about, from speech and language development to managing tricky behaviours or supporting your little one to transition to school.
You can even request episodes that you want to hear more on. Just head to our Instagram at You've Got This Podcast. We'd absolutely love your support over on Patreon. Head to You've Got This, where we'll be offering extra episodes and unique resources that we've created to support you on your journey.
We like to have a bit of a laugh and keep it real, so thanks for listening. We're over the moon to have you along for the ride.
So today we're talking about what happens when you have that second baby and your preschooler, your toddler's behavior goes crazy. Because I've been there, I've absolutely been there. I've got two kids. And when I had my second child, my first child, their behavior just went all over the shop. And I get so many messages from other parents being like, help, my firstborn is broken and I don't know what to do. And they're misbehaving all the time. How do I stop them from doing that? So that's what we're going to talk about today. Hey.
I mean, you'd kind of expect the firstborn to start misbehaving when there's a huge change in the home. Like, it's like they've gone from being an only child, completely doted on, every need attended to at any second, to then having to share that time, that space, that attention. There's different sounds going on at home, different sensory sort of input.
Yeah, if you think before everything was quiet and calm and you were so available to play and you had all the time in the world, and any time they made a noise you were available, you know, and now it's, wow, there's this thing here that is crying all the time. You know, my parents are feeding them all the time.
It's shitting, it's crying.
Yeah.
It smells, it's loud.
And yeah, Mum, you used to really care about my trends before, and now you want me to play with them by myself? No, I'm not enjoying any part of that. The change to having another sibling is beyond what we can probably comprehend. These, you know, our firstborn's tiny, underdeveloped brains.
Is it like going from a monogamous relationship to a polyamorous relationship?
Wow, you went there.
I went there. That's probably what it feels like.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, so imagine suddenly there's a third. You're like, wait.
I didn't agree to this.
Did I agree to this?
Yeah.
John, you didn't even say. But it is a bit like that because, you know, for a long time, you've probably been saying to your little one, or strangers that have been saying, you're going to be such a good big brother, or you're going to be a big brother, or you're going to be a great big sister, and you're going to be helping with the baby, and oh my God, you know. And
what on earth does that mean?
You know, what does that even mean?
It's an unfamiliar topic.
For our little ones, like, wow, I've got this whole new role as well. You've given me a job. What is a big brother? What is a big sister? Yeah.
You're now a caretaker. 2 years old, congratulations.
Yeah, and I think it's easy to fall into the habit. I know I had to catch myself doing this, but I know all parents of two can know this feeling. You leave your firstborn, who's your tiny, tiny baby, and you come back with a real tiny baby, and suddenly your firstborn is a huge giant. They're never tiny ever again.
It's a grown-ass adult.
Yeah, you've got a real tiny baby, and suddenly we expect more of that toddler because that you're more grown, you know, the baby's crying, like you need to look after yourself or you should be doing XYZ. And yeah, the level of expectation that is on the firstborn is, again, more than we could comprehend. So I think the biggest impact that we could have would be to help parents to see that it's not bad behavior. Our children are absolutely doing their best, hey?
Yeah. A good way to look at it is this misbehavior or bad behavior, or is this stress behavior? So is this in response to stress and changes.
Tell me more about that. So like, how would you know if, what is a stress behavior and how would you know?
So the sort of like the key differences between a misbehavior and a stress behavior is that misbehavior is where the child, so August, could have acted differently. He's aware that he shouldn't have done something and was perfectly capable of acting differently in that moment. Whereas a stress behavior is where the child, so I'll use August for his example, he's not fully aware of what he is doing or why, and he's got limited capacity to act differently. And for most developing brains, it's usually a stress behavior because their brains are not at a developed point enough for them to make a conscious decision and go, if I do this, X, Y, and Z is going to happen. And I'm fully in control of that decision that I'm making.
Yeah, absolutely. I think about that a lot in my parenting and when I'm coaching parents, because you know when you think, right, I'm going to do my best parenting today and I'm not going to shout. And then you get all triggered by the kids and then suddenly you find yourself raising your voice. So logically, you knew that you didn't want a parent like that. You want to do something else. But your thinking logical brain got quickly turned off by your trigger and your stress. And suddenly you've gone back to your stress response. That's what's happening for these kids. Hey, you know, their thinking brain, their logical brain of what is right to do and, you know, what's wrong to do isn't actually working. They are just responding to a feeling of unease.
Yeah, exactly. And stress can come from like five different main areas. We often think of stress as being like emotional response or that it's like a sensory impact. Mm-hmm. But there's five main domains that stress can come from. So there can be the biological, which is like that sensory. So like the noises, the smell of having a new baby, the new cry. And then there's emotional, so having strong emotions. So maybe they're feeling big emotions. They're feeling jealousy. Mm. They're feeling, you know, sad. They're feeling a bit of grief. You know, there's these big emotions that are going to be felt when you do have a new sibling in the home. Maybe they're feeling really excited. They're feeling full of love, but it's just a lot of emotion to be feeling.
Yeah.
There's also the cognitive stress. So difficulty processing certain kinds of information. So it might be that they're expecting to be this big brother, this big sister, this big sibling now, and they're expected to go and fetch the nappy and, you know, make the drink and do all these things that are like a lot more cognitively demanding. And then there's the social demand, so difficulty sort of like picking up on social cues or understanding the effect of their behavior on others. And so like if August does something and he doesn't understand the effect it's going to have on somebody else, or afterwards he sees that he's upset Etta, and then he feels a really big emotion because he feels bad about doing something that he didn't fully understand socially. And the last main sort of domain is what we call pro-social, so difficulty coping with other people's stresses. For an example, for us might be that you know, we know that there is a war on Gaza at the moment. That's a real pro-social stress for a lot of people. So that is going to be wearing away a lot of parents and people and family members, and that's going to be impacting your ability to manage your own stress and respond to stress from your children as well.
I've never heard of it described like that across domains. A few things came up for me there though, that one of them was, I mean, social media definitely heightens this, but if you think when you have a new baby, you're like, I want the perfect pictures of the new baby with the sibling. And of course you want your firstborn to like the new baby because you like them so much and you think they're going to be this pretty perfect pair. And sometimes that's absolutely not the case, but that can be added stress for our kids. If we're like, do you want to hold the baby? Do you want to hold them? Oh, come pat them. Oh, they're so cute. Oh, you're such a good big brother. Look at you. Speaking from experience, my son couldn't have cared. Well, he probably did. He probably had a lot of feelings, but how it came across was he didn't want to be anywhere near his new sibling. No, he didn't want a photo with her.
Avoidant, like it's just like, what is this unfamiliar situation? It's just scary. And even like as an adult visiting my friend who's had a baby recently, it's like, do you want to hold her? I'm like, no, not really. Like I would hate to drop her. I'd hate to not know how to hold her properly. Like even as an adult, it's kind of stressful. I mean, I don't have my kids. So.
Yeah, my son was just like, each picked his times where he wanted to be around her. And I could see kind of like cute aggression as well. He'd be like, oh, she's so, you know, he'd be like gritting his teeth and enjoy, you know, like, but it was almost.
You often describe it as an impish grin.
Yeah, he's just like, oh, I'm so excited, but almost in like a, it's too intense for me way. But then apart from that, he didn't want to be anywhere near her. And just being okay with that as a parent to know that your child is not going to act perfectly. Them struggling with having a new sibling can go on for a long time. It could go on for years. And actually, they do not need to like their sibling. And that is okay. It could, for some listeners, be the weight off their shoulders of, oh, I'm not doing something wrong. You know, this is just the reality for a child getting used to their new environment.
Yeah. Yeah, I remember my mum said that my eldest brother hit my youngest brother in the head with a slipper when he was like newborn breastfeeding.
Nice. Yeah.
Just because he was so stressed out. Yeah, like, I'm sure it happens all the time.
And of course, you'd think that is shockingly bad behavior and that that child needs to be reprimanded and they need to be lectured on why that's not the correct behavior around a baby and they need to be sent to their room, you know, whatever. But more than likely, your brother knew that it was inappropriate to hit someone with a slipper. That's all they had in the tank at the moment. That was their only way of like coping
communicating
that I do not feel right here.
Yeah, exactly. And it is all behavior is communication, isn't it? Mm. We talk about this time and time again that children are doing their absolute best. If they're acting out, it's a sign that they're stressed and we need to be thinking like why they're feeling this way or why they're acting this way and why now. What is different about their ability to cope with the situation? It might be that one day they can cope with it and another day they can't, and it's just like us adults. We've all got a certain capacity.
And we're more likely to respond kindly or as kindly as we can, given that we're exhausted with newborns. We're more likely to respond kindly when we know in our hearts that our children are doing their best and they are essentially saying to us, help me, mummy, this is chaos. Help me, mummy, I don't know what to do around this child. Will you still love me if I do this? I can't get your attention anymore. You're no longer interested in me brooming my cars. What if I broom my car at the baby's head? Do you respond now? And in the same vein, all attention is good attention to a child. They just want to connect with you. So if they bash a toy off the baby's head and you lose it, it won't feel good for them. But also, wow, that got mum's attention. I got mum's attention there for a bit.
Often children aren't seeking attention, they're seeking connection. It's not the social act of gaining attention. It is to seek connection, to get that support that they need. And we seek connection because it helps us regulate. Yeah. People help us regulate and feel better in our bodies.
And there's a need not being met there. Hey, so some behaviours, I know I've heard parents say, you know, my child was putting all of the dog food into the water bowl. Something that they knew they shouldn't do, but they just kept doing it. Or they were...
How annoying.
Yeah, or they were damaging my clothes. Or they chucked all the baby's nappies across the room. Or they prodded their sibling when they knew that they shouldn't. And all of those behaviours are so triggering. Hey, like, you just think, why are you doing that? Why are you doing that? Like, I'm already struggling.
You're just undone, like, the organisation.
Yeah, and I'm so tired. I haven't slept for days. My nipples are cracked. But it's when we can see that, wow... They're not meaning to do this. The best thing that we can do in those moments is to think, right, this is a call for help. I'm going to physically and kindly step in and stop them doing something. And every negative behavior or stress behavior isn't, you don't always have to make it a teaching moment. Like, you shouldn't be doing this because of this or the baby, you can't hit the baby because of this. Or most of the time your child will know. It can just be a case of stopping them gently, redirecting them, stopping them and connecting, stopping and meeting the need. They're hungry, they need a cuddle, they wanted a bit more time with you.
And when they are in that stress behavior state, they're actually not able to take on new learning anyway. Your ability to understand what's being said to you, like that cognitive part of your brain. I know you spoke about flipping your lid recently on your Instagram page, Sars, but it is about the fact that when your lid is flipped and you've responded in a stress behavior, you're not able to access that language piece of your brain anyway. So you're only wasting your own breath as a adult by trying to use it as a teaching moment. And, and you can do that later on when we're more regulated.
Yeah, it's a good one to remember, hey, that if our children are losing it, say less, because their language centers in their brain are essentially switched off. So you could be saying
they're not firing
the best things in the world and they might not be understanding any word of what you're saying. So if we were to talk about some positive strategies that parents could implement in the midst of the chaos, I mean, it's so hard to remember. I think the key one's going to be, remember your child doesn't want to do this, let's be a detective.
Yeah.
Shouting at them or having a go at them is, you know, not going to help. But are there any other strategies you can think of that would be really supportive in this situation?
I'd be just trying to comment on what they're doing, like giving them their attention, but not within like a negative way. So say that August was brooming his trucks, and then he came over and started brooming at his head. Mm-hmm. It might be like, I really like how you were brooming the trucks earlier. Should we try that a little bit more? Mm-hmm. And you can come show me how you broom them whilst I'm feeding Etta. So you're kind of saying like, yes, I know that you really want to be doing this, not don't do it on Etta. Mm-hmm. And another good little point to touch on is that when children are developing language, they don't necessarily understand the nots or the don'ts, yes, or the negative sentences. Mm-hmm. So you could be saying, don't brush Etta's hair with the broom. And our children might be hearing brush Etta's hair with the broom, yeah, because they don't understand what that negative sentence means. It comes later on with language development. So that's, they're not hearing that, not, they're not really understanding it. So we try to say what we want them to be doing, not what we don't want them to be doing. So instead of don't brush Etta's hair, be like, I like when you brush the trucks. Instead, mm-hmm, you want to grab a truck and we can do it together.
I really like the strategy of always pretending that my child's behaving even if they're not. So this sounds nuts, but love in that situation, if Augie was, yeah, like brushing at her head to see what will happen, and I'm a bit annoyed by her and she's making a noise or whatever, I'd say, I love how you're brushing her hair. Can you brush down her arms gently? Wonderful. So like sort of seeing the good and like quickly directing it to be better. This happened today, actually. It happens all the bloody time, actually. You ran at her excitedly and kind of boofed into her, because that's how sometimes they initiate play with each other, and you want to scream like, for goodness sake, you've hurt her again. But I said, I love how you're trying to get Etta to play. You could say, come play with me, Etta. And he just said, come play with me, Etta. And it quickly fixed the breakdown. So when you pretend like they're behaving and redirect, you kind of stop that feeling of, because I know for my son, if he feels like he's done something wrong, his behavior will spike even higher because he's embarrassed and he's stressed with himself. Yeah. So
embarrassment, I was about to say that, like embarrassment is a huge emotion that our children feel. I mean, even as adults, embarrassment is probably one of the worst feelings to feel. Mortifying. So when our children are feeling embarrassed, yeah, awful. I still have memories from when I was like 5, 6, and 7 at school of times I embarrassed myself, and I still have those memories. Oh, me too.
Absolutely. I'm sure we've all got examples of times we've horrifically embarrassed. I've got too many all the blummin' time. That time when I was working with a teacher and I was saying, I was telling her something about language processing, and I was just like, just say it verbatim, because my whole life I'd coded the word verbatim as verbatim and no one had stopped me. And I was, what, like 26? Just say it verbatim. She must have been like, this therapist is absolutely ludicrous.
When I first moved to the UK, I was running a language group with a teaching assistant and 4 children. And we had, like, dare I say it, picture cards with the name of the item. We were doing like a clothing thing. I didn't do the planning. I just got in there as a locum. And I realized that they had like a picture of a singlet and it said vest underneath it. And I thought, this is weird. This must be American. So I was like, this is a singlet. And then like there were slides and I was like, these are jandals. I shit you not, these are togs. And the teaching assistant had to stop me. And she was like, "You no, none of these." And like the caption literally told me, it's like vest, fucking swimmers.
The words are there. If you could just read.
The words are there. Just like, she's like, are you an illiterate speech therapist? Honestly, I live to this day. It haunts me. I wake up at night. It's like my sleep paralysis demon is the vest card.
So yeah, I think that's another good reason to not lose it with kids or call them out, because it can make more negative behaviors happen. Hey, it can make things spiral. So the best thing that we can do is gently stop them, connect with them, find what, meet the need. And you know, a lot of it was just keeping my son completely separate from my daughter. It was like, you're not interested in her, you don't have to be. They don't need to play together.
Yeah.
Play can come way along the line.
Yeah.
And every stage that a newborn child goes through, you know, they've got to get used to them being a newborn, right? That's a nightmare. Then they've got to get used to them crawling and getting close to their toys, then walking and getting into their toys.
True.
Then like every new stage is stressful, and that's a new thing for them to learn. So it's totally okay if they want to play out the way and take all their toys to a different point. We need to respect their needs in that moment and not sort of be forcing them to like or play their little one. However they're presenting is perfectly fine and normal.
We've done a pod on play, but we didn't really touch on the different social play levels, and you kind of like hit the nail on the head there, that children they don't develop like turn taking and like shared play until way later on. So just being able to play in parallel, so playing alongside someone, like that is huge, and that is very tricky for children to do. Mm-hmm. And that doesn't come until they're sort of like 2 or 3 anyway. So we can put so much pressure on our children to be like turn taking and give them this toy, and you know, they're just not ready for it yet.
Another strategy that I really love is talking to your child and to the room even as if you're on your child's team, especially when they're dysregulated. Yes. And misbehaving. So saying things like, oh, sometimes it's so frustrating having a little sister, hey, I can't wait for the time. Yeah. She's going to be napping soon, and me, you are going to have some special time, what would you like to do? Sort of aligning with them and being like, this is hard, like acknowledge the feeling that this is hard, and gosh, it's hard, I'm really busy at the moment. It can be, that can be really positive. Also trying never to blame the baby. So saying, I can't get you now, I've got to feed Etta, can also almost be like creating more hate for Etta because she's taking all your time. But if I was to say, I'll be right with you, I just need a couple more minutes, I'll be right with you, you know, like anything that isn't blaming her.
Yeah.
And I used to always make a point as well of saying to Etta, you know, the newborn that couldn't understand anything, I'd say, wait a moment, Etta, I'll come to you soon, I'm helping August at the moment. So that was for August to hear. That was for him to hear that, well, I'm priority sometimes. My mum...
It's balanced.
Yeah, my mum's telling that crying baby to wait a second, and I am priority. I'm not always put mid-secondary whenever the baby makes a noise. So yes, sounding like you're on your child's team can make all the difference and make your child feel like, oh, mum, my parent is still with me. My parent gets me. My parent acknowledges that this is difficult for me, and I'm not losing them by doing all these behaviours that I don't mean to do. You know, I'm not pushing them away. They still love me.
Yeah, that's a great strategy. So we have covered quite a few different strategies today, and as per usual, we will be putting a handout on our Patreon, which goes alongside this podcast, which puts all the strategies in one simple place for you guys. As per usual, if you like what you hear, please do give us some good feedback, rate us, subscribe, do all of the things that helps boost our podcast and then encourages us to keep on going.
Yeah, look, if you haven't been to our Patreon and got all the free resources, what are you doing? Because there's so many gems on there, and it's free to become a member, and it's free to download all the stuff that we put out there, and they're all kind of like in a poster format. You can print it out and stick it on your fridge, and or give it to those in-laws that you're sick of the weird stuff that they get up to, the weird stuff that they say.
You've got a reference point to shame them.
So mother-in-law, could you just read this? So yeah, just remember that you've got this, even if it feels right now that you haven't, you really do. Thanks for listening.